Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone can hear me. This is the Voice Inspire American Soccer Show with a World Cup break. As don't know, hopefully I am on the air. We'll see what happens. I haven't seen the I don't know if I'm on the air right now, but hopefully I am. The theme music did go by. And we'll see what happens. And as we talk here, take a nice World Cup break. And as we move forward here, boy, oh boy, oh boy, it's really, really interesting when you take a nice long break. Well, it's not really like, don't know if it's a long break or not, but, you know, it's just for a day because we need a breather. We need a breather for this game. We need a breather for this situation where it is, of course, the U.S. Open Cup comes in as we take a break here. And looks like I am on the air now. Yep. There we go. I'm on the air. There we go. That's it. Now I'm feeling better. It looks like I am on the air officially now. Thank goodness for that, because we don't want to be not on the air talking about soccer. And, you know, it's just a wonderful thing to talk about because we need to discuss these games that happened after some of these group stage games were finished in the World Cup. But now we're on the air. It's wonderful to see that. And, you know, it's just great to see. And wonderful to know that it's all good here. And once again, everyone, as I'm, you know, you're scrambling to make sure that everything is okay and make sure that everything is working properly here. But still, though, and you know what? It's just feeling very good about making sure that everything's all plugged in. Everything is working properly. And that we can get on with the show. Because once again, ladies and gentlemen, for the first time ever, the U.S. Open Cup Committee has added a fifth round to the tournament. And it's going to get bigger. It's going to get longer. It's going to grow more. Why? Simple. Because this tournament is finally becoming where it needs to be. It's finally going to happen on where it has to go. It has to grow. It has to get bigger. It has to get bigger and better. And we need everyone to go to these games. I understand, you know, it's the Open Cup, but still, you have to get out there and you have to support not just your club, but of course the tournament as well, because it is absolutely fantastic when you have these games going on. I mean, where is all this excitement? Where is all this energy? Where is all this fun stuff happening? I'll tell you where. It's happening here on the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show, because we love to talk about the U.S. Open Cup. We love to talk about, or at least I love to talk about, the U.S. Open Cup, because it is an absolutely fantastic tournament that we all have to get behind. And once again, I understand it's during the World Cup and everything. There will be, hopefully, some more changes will be made in another World Cup year, hopefully. But at the same time, you just have to say that, you know, we got to go and support what we need to do here, and it's, you know, it's fantastic. I am happy to see the Open Cup becoming better, a better tournament, a much larger tournament. And we have these now, of course, everything being pushed up. We have the round five, which is now the official round of 16 here for U.S. soccer as we get ready to discuss these great games, these fantastic games going on here. Let me tell you something. You have right now, after everything that's happened here, there are only three sides in the lower levels that were advancing from round two, of course, which was USL Pro League, NESL, which is round three, and of course MLS came in round four. But to see three teams advancing into round five, one from the USL Pro League in Rochester, and the other two came from the NESL with the Carolina Railhawks and the Atlanta Silverbacks. And when you mention the Atlanta Silverbacks, you mention that Eric Winalda is working his magic once again in the Open Cup. It is astonishing to see what he has done with this Silverbacks team, even though he is not, unfortunately, he is not a full-time head coach. He's just a technical director. But to see how he's worked this team, it's just been an unbelievable thing. And you have to say right about now, I think, you know, they're a dangerous side. And, of course, let's not forget the Seattle Sounders in Major League Soccer. They are right now back to where they want to be after what happened the season before in the Open Cup, where they were eliminated in the earlier rounds by the Tampa Bay Rowdies at the time. So Seattle right now also on the way forward, on the way back to maybe where they are in Open Cup dominancy. We'll see what happens, obviously. But to tell you the truth, it's a lot of fun when you talk about the Open Cup. It's a lot of fun when you go out there and you say, hey, I want that prize. I take this seriously. I understand what some people are saying. You know, oh, well, here we go again. You know, this guy doesn't take it seriously. This, you know, this one, that one. You know, all of a sudden, you know, did I pay my money for this? No, I did not. Well, no, that's not. Look, there's nothing you can do. But at the same time, if it looks like they're not paying attention or they're not taking it seriously, I beg to differ with that argument. I will say that there are some that probably think that. But at the same time, there are those that are thinking that, hey, I want this, but I got beat. My team got beat fair and square. I mean, you got to give it to credit to the other side. You have to give credit to the opposition who wanted it more. I'm not saying that, you know, one side did not want it more. Of course they did. But unfortunately, the other side was revved up a lot better and raring to go, unlike the side that probably lost. So, I mean, you have to understand, these are the situations right now. These are the situations that come up when you have these Open Cup games, because the supporters are wondering, did you really try to win? Of course they try to win. I think the players, you know, have the pride to go out there and to achieve a victory if possible. You know, they want to go out there and they want to be successful. They want to go out there and they want to show not just to their coaches, but, of course, to the fans that they want to go out there and they want to just do their best and to get a win, because this is a big opportunity for them. And, if you know, they want to take advantage of the opportunity given. And, you know, once again, if that's an argument about if you're a Red Bulls fan about the whole Mike Tecky situation against the Cosmos, look, I don't believe that at all. I believe he put out there a strong side without Tim Cahill, without Thierry Henry, without Roy Miller, and without an injured Dax McCarty. So I really believe that Mike Petke, back in round four, did his best to get a victory. They tried their best. And when you have a lower side all of a sudden, they get on you, and they score an early goal in the eighth minute, and you know what? This is an opportunity that, to be honest with you, it fell through. I don't believe, you know, for a minute that Mike Petke intentionally tried to say, you know, we're not going to win this Open Cup game. I don't believe that at all. I believe he truly wanted to win it. I mean, obviously, you've already heard my rant in round four review as I did my intro monologue. I'm not going to rehash that today, because today's about the fifth round. Today's about those teams that went forward to go into the quarterfinals of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. This is about these teams that deserve our praise. They deserve our praise for the great job they've done getting into the next round of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. And you know what? I'm talking about four games that were won in extra time and one game that was won in the round of penalties. And, of course, four games that had sending offs. I mean, we're talking about how many freaking red cards here being dealt. We got three red cards with the Philadelphia Cosmos game, and we'll get into that with Earl Reed in a taped interview. I mean, you got New England and Rochester. There's a guy sent off. Chicago, Columbus, a guy sent off. And then you have the whole Colorado-Atlanta situation, which we'll get to in about 4 minutes with Ryan Martin, the play-by-play voice of the Atlanta Silverbacks on their streams. And then you have the match that went into penalties between the Seattle Sounders and the San Jose Earthquakes. And you're talking about crazy, crazy games that you love to watch, that you love to see, that you don't know what's going to happen. And then again, David versus Goliath in three of these games and three of these round of 16 games, I'm telling you, it's just been an unbelievable stuff when you're seeing the U.S. Open Cup just absolutely having a wonderful, an absolutely wonderful moment again, because we are seeing stuff going on. We're seeing stuff happening again. It's just an It's just wonderful to watch these games happen. Everything's on the line. Professional pride is on the line. And wanting to win a trophy to get to, of course, that CONCACAF Champions League spot. That is just so precious. I mean, look what BC did, even though they got eliminated in the fourth round by the Rochester Rhinos. You know, they got into the Champions League because of last year's Open Cup Championship. And you know what? Good for them. And that's the idea. You want them to try to get into a tournament where your regular season has been absolutely crap. And that's the truth. A regular season that has been absolutely crap. But you know what? It's just one of those things where you can't help it. And then here you go. And you know what? It's just a wonderful thing to see. It's just a wonderful thing to talk about. It's a wonderful thing when you see these teams fighting, scratching, clawing for that trophy. For that trophy that is just an absolutely wonderful thing to fight for. Because you know for a fact that you will be crowned club champions of American soccer. That's what this is all about. That is what it's all about when you're fighting hard to win that trophy. Even during a World Cup year, even during a World Cup year, this is a possibility. So as we get ready to sit back, relax, and take it easy, and I hope everyone's listening to me here today, live. If not live, it's all right. We can go. You can go on the archives and take a look and see what's going on. But you know what, folks? This is why we're having a lot of fun here today, because we're celebrating American soccer, not just World Cup American soccer, but U.S. Open Cup soccer. Because this is the stuff that makes people become legends in American soccer when you go out and you perform in the U.S. Open Cup, and at the same time, to see the boys qualify out of the knockout, out of the group stage into the knockout rounds for the second straight year. So we'll see what happens. Hold on. And apparently that is on the regular horn, on the rumors phone. Mr. Ryan Martin, who is calling in, he'll be calling in very soon for the show here. So maybe we'll try and I'll buzz him. Let's see what happens here. If we can I can punch him in here, and we'll see what happens. As there he is. Good, good, good. As we have the play-by-play voice of the Atlanta Silverbacks, my good friend Ryan Martin. Ryan, thank you for the time. And, you know, it's a great day to be an American soccer fan, isn't it?
Probably a great day to be relieved, if anything. I'm probably recovering just as much as everybody else is around the country today.
Absolutely. Of course, you must have been in the fetal position.
Yeah, but, you know, thankfully I wasn't alone, so.
That's absolutely true.
A lot
That's
of people can relate to that. Especially
absolutely.
After Ghana got that equalizer, I think we were all kind of worried about the possibility of Ghana again knocking us out without doing it firsthand. So,
absolutely, yeah.
But hey, we're alive today, and that's all that matters.
That's all that matters. We're alive today, and then we're going to have some mussels and fries on Tuesday. But anyway, you know, obviously the Open Cup was going on, and Atlanta took the long trip, not completely across the country, but heading over to Commerce City, Colorado, to take on the Rapids. Before we get to the nasty stuff and all of the stuff that we're going to talk about later, how good has Jaime Chavez been for the Silverbacks, not just in an NASL league season, but in these Open Cup games so far? Because he had a brace in this game, and he just looks fantastic so far.
Yeah, I think, you know, between him and Cuadro Poku, we're talking about two of the revelations in the league by far. We look back to when Chavez was signed just before the start of the season, and at that point, of course, all the talk was on Deion McCauley. We know all about his goal-scoring record with the Leafs. David Estrada of Seattle was with the team on loan at that time. So it really looked like Chavez was going to be a bit of a work in progress and the guy who had been signed as some cover. But as it has turned out, he's been anything but that. You know, he's filled that role of being the quintessential target striker well, but even beyond that, is just fearless in the air. He's already maybe put himself in a couple of dangerous situations with trying to get to crosses, but more times than not, it works out for him. He really hasn't met a cross that he's not willing to get on the end of. We've seen him score already quite a few goals in the air, whether in league play or in the Open Cup. And, you know, hate to say it, obviously it would be nice if he stayed around in Atlanta for a couple of years, but if he maintains this kind of form, you really have to wonder if some teams a bit further up the food chain might take a look at him. He's been fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. He has looked fantastic. But unfortunately now, we're going to have to talk about the negative side of this situation because, wow, as great of a goal scorer as he has been for Atlanta, what the heck happened in the around the 60th, 61st minute? I mean, I barely saw the highlight. He stomped on a Colorado player. What happened?
If memory serves me correctly, it was Drew Moore. Apparently, just before that moment, before that incident, he and Moore had been maybe going at it a little bit. But from what I saw, nothing you don't see over the course of any given game. We know that strikers and center backs are going to have their little off-the-ball battles and little push and little shove there. You accept that as being part of it, especially when, in the case of Moore, you're going up against such an aerial threat like Jaime Chavez. But apparently it escalated from there. Chavez was rightfully sent off for stomping on Drew Moore. And as I'm sure a lot of us know by now, that's where everything just took one of the more bizarre turns that you ever see in a game. It certainly wasn't the last red card in the span of, you know, 90 seconds, 2 minutes or so.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was weird. I mean, Chavez gets sent off. Cuadro Poku gets
sent
off.
Rightfully so.
Yeah, oh,
right.
No,
and
absolutely.
And Borfor-Carr.
Yeah. And Borfor-Carr.
Yeah.
I mean,
and Moore was sent off as well for Colorado.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, I think if Juan Guzman, the referee on the night, if he had stopped there with sending them both off, maybe he saw something or the linesman saw something that would have warranted a red for Moore, stop there and have it be 10 versus 10. naturally, after a moment like that, tempers are going to be running very hot for both teams. And I think at some point, if you're the referee, unless we have egregious things happening all around and guys really getting into fistfights and obvious red card offenses, at that point you just have to play peacekeeper. And yeah. Juan Guzman, normally I would hate to call any referee out because it's a very thankless job, it's a very hard job. But in this case, we're not talking about a blown offside call, we're not talking about a missed foul here or there. This was a case of a referee not showing restraint on his own part. And instead of showing his own cool head and getting the game under control, he sought to just seemingly dish out red cards almost at random. We saw Pablo Mascherini sent off. We saw Eric Winalda sent off. One of Atlanta's assistants was also sent off. So I don't know how any of that was warranted. And I think both sides were right to wonder just what the heck was going on at that
mm-hmm.
point.
No, absolutely, because, you know, that is the strangest situation I've ever seen or ever heard or ever read about because, you know, like we said before, you got one Rapids player sent off. You've got Jaime Chavez, as you said, rightfully sent off, Poco sent off, Carr sent off. Now you have both coaches tossed, Winalda and Mastroeni from the game. And even though Atlanta survives being down three men, not one, not two, but three men, you're going to move on to the quarterfinals, and now you're finding out, or at least you found out maybe a day or two before, that none of these red cards are going to be rescinded. Well, I mean, as you said already, Chavez's red was deserved.
Yeah, Chavez, sure. I mean, no arguments there at all. And
right.
I think he would admit to that it was just a moment of red mist, as they might say in England. His was warranted. Poku, I still have no idea why Poku was sent off. No idea whatsoever. Carr, from what I've read from various reports, there might have been some language involved. But again, I go back to the point that I made earlier. It was obviously a very heated situation. And maybe in the spirit of just getting the game back under control, you kind of understand that maybe some, you know, very colorful language is going to be used in some of these situations, and you play peacekeeper instead of just immediately brandishing a red card. If you give out some yellows in that case, okay. Yeah, at least everybody knows where they stand there. But it had a chance, you know, and maybe on one hand it kind of did ruin what was yet another fantastic Open Cup game. Because, you know, this year's edition has been replete with storylines so far. And the story of this game, I mean, even though Atlanta did still win, it would have been, in my objective opinion here, certainly not subjective being associated with the Silverbacks, objectively speaking, if Atlanta had lost this game because of being down to eight men, it would have been extremely unfortunate because it certainly wasn't warranted for such extreme punishments to be dealt out. But on the other hand, too, all credit to the Silverbacks for showing some resolve. I think a lot of sides would have capitulated after that. And, you know, indeed, it did get kind of nervy after Derby Carrillo gave away a penalty and they really had to hold on then with only the one goal margin. But it's unfortunate. Bigger picture, looking forward in the Open Cup, it's unfortunate that the likes of Poku, who he's another player who's, if he's not in MLS next year, I would be very surprised. It's unfortunate that he's not going to be around for yet another big stage against an MLS opponent. Unfortunate for Borfo Carr, who's been a longtime veteran of the Silverbacks, to not be able to take part in another game versus MLS competition. But we'll see. You know, with the way the Silverbacks have gone this season, I think it's kind of expect the unexpected. And maybe this will end up being a very all-hands-on-deck kind of situation against Chicago in a few days' time.
Absolutely. Before we even get to your quarterfinal matchup, Eric Winalda, he has his magic for the Open Cup. I mean, we've seen it when he was running California FC in the U.S. Adult Soccer Association all the way on the West Coast, how they – in this Open Cup a couple of years back from round one all the way up till round four. And it looks like he's working his magic with Atlanta now as your technical director slash head coach slash when certain season comes back online, I'm going to have to coach the team from Skype. But what is it about Eric Winalda right now that's given Atlanta this wonderful opportunity in the Open Cup to get this magic going?
I think it's a couple of things. One, we have to maybe go back to his technical director hat. As you just mentioned, one of the several hats that he wears these days. He has a knack for finding talent in places you would never think to look. And I think it speaks maybe to the level of soccer that we actually do have in this country, that he's able to find some of these guys, put them into his system, and the next thing you know, they're claiming a couple of MLS scouts along the way. A guy like Chavez, perfect example. You know, he had been playing some semi-pro and amateur soccer out in California before being signed on with the Silverbacks. He's giving some of these guys a chance who maybe would otherwise fall through the cracks. Maybe they are out of the scouting spotlight, shall we say, especially for MLS teams, other NASL teams. But he finds something in these guys. And he comes in, or brings them in, allows them to have this opportunity to prove themselves in a very professional setting. And obviously, as we know, going now to his coaching acumen, he's a guy who's going to give, especially, strikers, creative midfielders like a Chavez or a Poku, he's going to give them that chance to shine. Whether it works out or not, we're always going to be on the attempt to be on the front foot anyway and attack, almost regardless of the competition. And I think that's one thing that has worked out so well against two MLS opponents so far is, it's not that we disrespect the competition, but we don't afford them too much respect either. We're not in a situation of thinking, well, we're the second division NASL team, so we're going to bunker for 90 minutes and hit a counterattack or a set piece somewhere along the way. No, they haven't done that. And obviously, up to this point, it's worked out to great effect in the Open Cup.
Absolutely. And hopefully for Atlanta and for the Silverbacks, getting through this next opponent obviously will be a tough hurdle to cross over, to jump over. And once again, you're going to face the Chicago Fire at home at Silverbacks Park. I bet you've seen their stream, of course. They won in extra time against the Columbus Crew, and they are also a four-time Open Cup champion. What is it about Chicago that's going to make this game a little bit more dangerous and a little more worrisome for the Silverbacks to try to get into the semifinals?
Yeah, I mean, obviously our absences are going to maybe dictate some things as well. But regarding Chicago, Frank Yallop, even if Chicago hasn't had the season so far that they would have otherwise preferred, we know Frank Yallop is going to have them organized, tough to break down, and I think upon viewing some game tape, Yallop is obviously going to maybe place some defensive prowess at a real premium in this game, which it sounds like a bit of a role reversal when we're talking about an MLS side playing an NASL team in the Open Cup, but I think that's probably going to be the biggest challenge. Of course, we saw Chicago flying there in the late stages of that game against Columbus, and obviously with Parkhurst being sent off an extra time for Columbus, that maybe helped Chicago's cause a bit as well. But it wouldn't surprise me if we saw Chicago go with a very pragmatic approach, and we'll see if the Silverbacks can break them down. It's going to be certainly an interesting contrast of coaching styles, and obviously, we know Winalda won't be able to be on the touchline for this game, but by the time the game rolls around, he will have installed his game plan, and they're still going to play in his typical style, so maybe that only matters so much. It's going to be an interesting chess match, I think. But from a Silverbacks perspective, given what they've already done in these last two rounds, beating MLS opposition, even if they were down to 8 men in this last game. You'd have to think that they're going to come into this game very, very confident, needless to say. So, again, it'll be a very interesting matchup. If no disrespect at all to Chicago in saying this. I feel like I should qualify it first before making this statement. But you have to think if the Silverbacks are able to beat a Real Salt Lake side, but granted, they were without a couple of very key players, as we know, a couple of them who are still playing in Brazil right now. It was still a Real Salt Lake side with plenty of talent and a lot of key pieces that were still there. And then being able to beat Colorado on the road in very trying circumstances. I don't think there's any reason for Silverbacks fans and obviously the Silverbacks themselves to go into this game and not think they have a chance to win.
Right. Well, all I can say is good luck against the Fire. I know they'll be ready to go. And
hopefully
we
finish with 11.
That's right.
If we finish with 11, I think we'll be in decent shape. So.
Exactly. That's the most important thing. Make sure that whoever's refereeing the match keeps that red card in the back pocket. We don't need to see
Don't use that unless you absolutely need to.
Exactly. Unless it's like the X-Men character Gambit, where he'll probably turn the card into a flame and then he'll just burn right through you and say, okay, red card, you're done.
Well, I think that's already what happened to us this past round, so hopefully we won't see that again.
Hopefully not. Ryan, thank you very much for the time, and I'll talk to you next time. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks.
Ryan Martin, of course, the play-by-play voice for the Atlanta Silverbacks on their streams, and, of course, we shall see what happens as Atlanta's going to have a tough time. But, talking about comic book characters, as everyone knows, Superman's kryptonite is the color green. For some strange reason, the LA Galaxy's kryptonite, when they go to Cary, North Carolina, is orange and or blue. Because apparently this man has seen it all 3 years in a row. The greatest home field advantage in the North American Soccer League is Wake Med Soccer Park. And it's Neil Morris from The Independent who's here to talk about that match. And, Neil, I have to tell you, I don't know what's the secret recipe down there in Cary, North Carolina, but for some strange reason the Railhawks – in the Open Cup and in the regular season of the NASL, finds ways to get the wins.
I believe, right? I guess it's time. I guess it's time to start believing. I don't know. Every year, I keep thinking the Railhawks' luck is going to run out. They clipped the Galaxy 2 years ago and then lost to a pretty solid Chivas side, and last year they beat the Galaxy again and got some revenge on Chivas on their way to the quarterfinals of the U.S. Open Cup. This year it's reversed. They get to play Chivas in the fourth round, defeat them, and then it's the Galaxy coming to town again, and this time they make no bones about it. They're playing for keeps. They're tired of losing. Landon Donovan's telling everyone on the Internet that they're sick of losing to Carolina, and they're going to play their starters, and they did. And for large stretches of last Tuesday's game, the Galaxy totally dominated the game. I don't know what the percentage of possession was, but I had to believe it was – at least in the first half, it had to be close to 65-70%. And for the game, it was a large majority for the Galaxy. The Galaxy outshot Carolina 31-6. Had 11 corners kicks to only 4 for Carolina. So, but Carolina did what they had to do. I was on Twitter yesterday with a friend of mine that was watching the Germany-U.S. game, and halfway through the first half, they tweeted to me and said, "This reminds me of the Galaxy Railhawks game, which is you try to hold serve as long as you can, and you stay in the match, and you hope that the other team gets tired and or frustrated, and you can clip a counter." And that's exactly what happened.
Absolutely, and it came in extra time by Daniel Jackson, who to me seems to be one of those players that, I mean, you would know more about him than I would, Neil. I'll definitely admit to that. But to me, watching these streams, he's the type of player that comes up big for Carolina whenever the game dictates it. and he just comes up huge.
Yeah. Jackson's a guy, I was actually high on him in preseason because he, as Colin Clark, is a word that Collins used a lot for Jackson is raw. He's a very raw talent, came out of Coker College last year, actually got drafted in the MLS Super Draft, but never latched on. He was drafted by Real Salt Lake, but never latched on to them or Chicago or D.C. United. And eventually fell to Carolina, and they brought him in and gave him a tryout, and he caught on very quickly. He had a couple of really nice goals in the preseason that I saw. A very tall, lanky striker with above-average foot skills and very above-average pace. But we didn't know how much time he would get on the field, especially once Mike Grella arrived. Well, Mike Grella and Tony Stoll, neither of them played last Tuesday because they're out of contract after the NASL spring season, and the team is still attempting to renegotiate. So Carolina was not only was Carolina playing a first-string LA Galaxy team, they were playing without arguably their best center back and their starting striker, and their starting goalkeeper, Kira Fitzgerald, was still hurt, which means backup goalkeeper Scott Goodwin, who stood on his head against Chivas, got another chance at stardom, and boy, did he make the most of it. He had 8 saves against the Galaxy, including a 2 or 3 really spectacular ones on Landon Donovan and Robbie Keane shots during the second half and overtime. So, you know, not only was Carolina playing a great team, but they were playing without 2 or 3 of their key contributors. And Jackson came on as a substitute, and that goal he scored was his first as a Railhawk, and hopefully not his last. And the other interesting part about that scoring sequence is that the assist came from Nick Zimmerman, who the last time he was seen in a competitive match for Carolina was 2012 when he was the second leading scorer in the NASL. He injured his knee while trialing for Sporting KC before the 2013 season and had microfracture knee surgery. He didn't play all last year, and he hasn't played a competitive match all this year. And then in the second half against the Galaxy Tuesday, we saw he was on the substitute list, and Colin Clark put him in, which was a wise move for a couple of reasons. One, you know, Zimmerman's the kind of guy that's not going to be intimidated by the Galaxy starting lineup. He's played with these guys before, so he wasn't going to be intimidated. And it was sort of a boost, you know, when the PA announcer announced, you know, now entering the match, Nick Zimmerman, there was some audible woes from the fans because they knew who Nick is. He's a fan favorite, and they didn't expect him to play. And he comes in the game, and it's like a burst of energy to not just the fans, but also the guys on the field who are, you know, you had to believe they were thinking, okay, let's put our fatigue aside and let's try to win this for ourselves and for Nick.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you get a burst of energy like that, great things happen on the pitch. And, you know, Carolina forces this into extra time. And once again, Daniel Jackson gets that game winner in extra time to defeat the Galaxy for the hat trick. 3 consecutive Open Cup tournaments, and it's 3 consecutive wins for the Railhawks against the Galaxy. Now, you're telling me, as we were talking about having you on the show today, that the Railhawks, the reason why this was moved away from the main stadium at Wake Med Soccer Park was because they were changing the grass. They were changing the turf so they can get ready for the College Cup tournament later on in the year. And, you know, pot luck being 50-50 on the coin toss that you might not host the game, but you did, and you had to move it to the second field. Now, my question is this. Did you move the Kryptonite out of the main stadium and into the center of field 2?
Apparently. Apparently it was, you know, some sort of ancient burial ground of that whole park, I guess. I mean, it was a little bit of an interesting scene. You know, the field 2, it's not like it's some field that's, you know, 5 miles away. I mean, it's immediately adjacent to the main stadium. They actually share a common concourse. But the capacity is much less, so you had folks that were, you know, buying tickets to sit on. There's grass embankments that people were sitting on. They trucked in temporary aluminum bleachers to go on the west side of the field, which is normally open to field 3. You know, they got all the advertising banners and everything in place, and it looked like a professional setup. And the field, of course, there was never any problem with the actual field, which is, as all the fields are at Wade Men's Soccer Park, are absolute top-notch. And, you know, as far as the quality of the pitch, it was not a problem at all. Capacity, there was a concern. It was a maximum of 3,000 once they carted in and squeezed in all the seats they could, which is a significant difference from last year, where the Railhawks set an attendance record for their win over the Galaxy with, you know, over 8,100 in attendance. So, you know, you worry that drop in attendance is going to be a drop in energy, and I think there was for the most part. It's not the same, obviously, but it was an interesting sort of setup because where they had to use the old locker rooms instead of the new ones on the renovated side of the main stadium. So to get in and out of the park and to get from the locker room to the field, the teams actually had to walk through the grandstands. So you've got – it was a great scene because now you have these temporary barricades that are set up where you've got Landon Donovan and Robbie Keane and all the rest of them walking right through the middle of the stairwell going down to the field. But it wasn't chaos at all. You know, the barricades were set up and the staff had everything set up and the fans were very respectful and some of the players on their way in and out of preseason warm-up stopped to sign autographs. So it was almost like this old barnstorming feel to the occasion. It was an interesting situation and a much more intimate setup as far as fans were concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is one of those crazy moments where you don't expect this sort of thing to happen, then all of a sudden you get the dilemma, but at least it was able that you got the you get the match underway, and it did go as far as it did, and now luck of the coin flip once again, Neil, as you go into the quarterfinals, and you're hosting FC Dallas, who had themselves a heck of a match against Houston Dynamo in the fifth round, and they win it in extra time as well. Just crazy, crazy games in the fifth round.
Yeah, and the Railhawks' luck continues on getting home games. I've already had a couple of folks from Minnesota derisively text me about the Railhawks' luck on getting home U.S. Open matches. But, you know, there's only a slight bit of luck to it. One thing Carolina does that a lot of lower division teams don't do is they bid for every Open Cup match. The fee that you have to pay U.S. Soccer increases by round, but the Railhawks, despite some of their budgetary issues as far as signing players, one thing they do is they bid on every U.S. Open Cup match, regardless of what the fee is. I mean, they knew they were going to have a smaller capacity against the Galaxy, and thus the ticket revenue was going to be less, and thus they wouldn't make as much money, but they still bid on the match anyway because they wanted the home field advantage, not just for their fans, but I think Carolina, as great as they are at home, they are equally abysmal on the road. So, you know, if Carolina goes on the road, I'm afraid to say that the gig is up. But they have a 23-game unbeaten streak at home right now. And I think they believe that they can beat anybody at Wade Men's Soccer Park. Why not? Now, FC Dallas is going to be an interesting opponent. You know, for all the cachet of the Galaxy and Donovan and Robbie Keane, who, by the way, Robbie Keane played all 120 minutes the other night. So did Jorginho, and Landon Donovan came on in the 64th, and A.J. De La Garza played the whole game. So the Galaxy were playing for keeps. But for all the cachet of Chivas or L.A. Galaxy, they're still in the bottom half of the Western Conference. You know, FC Dallas is fourth. They've got far more points and had a far better season, although it's technically a losing season, than those other two. But, you know, teams always need motivation, and I suspect, you know, one little small side note or interesting note about this match is that it's going to be Colin Clark going against his old MLS club. Obviously, he hasn't coached there in a long time, but he was manager of FC Dallas, formerly the Dallas Burn, for 3 years before he went to Puerto Rico. So, you know, I'm sure he'll gin that up as motivation and want to get one back on his old team. But you know, it's probably a right now it's a better opponent than the other two teams, although you hesitate to say better than a team that has Landon Donovan and Robbie Keane in it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're playing better. And, you know, once you're in your third straight year of playing a particular team, whether it's, you know, the Tampa Bay Rowdies or the L.A. Galaxy, you start to develop a confidence and a familiarity with them. FC Dallas, they haven't played. So there's going to be a mystery on both sides, I think. And I think it's going to come down to scouting and motivation and hopefully having your full complement of players in place. But I'm not going to sit here and say Carolina can't win the match because they're playing at home, and I've learned better than to doubt them at Waitman-Zarka Park.
Well, you know, right now I think Colin's going to really rally the troops here because of what happened with him in FC Dallas. Of course, there's no nothing that smells of a great, great story of an Open Cup run involving a big-time matchup against your former employers in MLS that, you know, he probably felt he was wronged by. So I think this could be the stream of the round. I haven't seen it posted on U.S. Soccer yet on their website, but, of course, if it does, I'll definitely put money down on the Railhawks because I think there's going to be revenge here for Colin Clark.
Well, there'll definitely be, and even if there wasn't, he'd manufacture it for the sake of motivation. Remember, after the Galaxy match the other day in the post-game press conference, he mentioned with thanks the fact that Landon Donovan had mentioned a couple of days before the match that they were sick of losing to Carolina, and I asked him if he put that up on the bulletin board, and he said, "I didn't have to." So, there, you know, athletes always look for motivation, and, you know, I think when Donovan said that, it sort of galvanized the team, heck, galvanized the fan base of saying, Landon Donovan and the LA Galaxy are tired of losing to the Railhawks, and then lo and behold, they lose to them again. So Colin's going to use every bit of motivation at his disposal, and you know, he's always going to be motivated, no matter if it's his old team or a team he's never seen before. But to the extent that he's able to translate that to his players, he will. And, you know, the bottom line is this is a quarterfinals match. Carolina got to the quarterfinals last year, had to travel to Real Salt Lake. It was in the middle of the last week of the spring season with Carolina having a game coming up to clinch the spring season. They sat a lot of their starters against Real Salt Lake, lost, and then didn't get the job done against the Atlanta Silverbacks the following weekend and ended up fumbling away the spring season championship. And that's something that the team, the coaches, the staff, and the front office never got over for the rest of the year. It stuck in their craw all year long. So, you know, they're back in the quarters this year, and they've got a home game this year. And they know that if they win this, they're in the semifinals for the first time, only the second time in team history, and the first time since 2007. And who knows if they might even get a home game for the semifinals. So,
well, yeah.
There's a lot of motivation going on here, and with what they've been able to accomplish in Cary, who knows? You put your first team out there, and you don't. This time the FC Dallas game is July 9th. The NASL season restarts at home on July 12th, but I can assure you that they're not going to be sitting starters this year.
Oh, absolutely not. I believe that the Railhawks will definitely have their starters ready to go, and hopefully those two guys signed and ready to add on. So, Neil, thank you for the time. Good luck in the quarterfinals against FC Dallas, and I'll talk to you soon before this NASL fall season gets underway.
Look forward to it, Daniel. Thank you.
No problem at all. It's Neil Morris of The Independent taking care of the triangle, of course, which is Cary, Raleigh, and Durham, North Carolina, as we move forward here and on the Four Seasons Fire American Soccer Show, talking about the U.S. Open Cup in the fifth round of the review show. Talking about some of these games, don't have a full lineup of guests for today, and that's understandable. It's been one of those strange ones where you mix up the Open Cup with the World Cup, but still, as we move forward here, talking about the game between the Seattle Sounders hosting the San Jose Earthquakes. I almost said the Seahawks. I didn't want to do that, but I almost did. But this game, watching on the stream, early goals, great defense, and then forcing extra time, and then going into the round of penalties, of course. A lot of yellow cards being flashed at the Earthquake. Satiba Harris got booked in the 19th minute, but then a good long-distance rip by Steven Leonard made it 1-0 San Jose in the 24th minute. But then 2 minutes later, it was Kenny Cooper, who always seems to come up big when we're playing U.S. Open Cup games. I remember that big goal he scored against the Charleston Battery 2 years ago for the Red Bulls. He always finds a way to get his goals. He has 3 goals right now in this tournament, including the fourth round matchup against PSA Elite. Has Kenny Cooper got a brace on that one? This is his 3rd goal of the Open Cup this year. So he has 3. But you have to say for Seattle, you know, they are basically wanting to get back into the Open Cup final. They want to continue their Open Cup dominance here in American soccer. And you just have to say that for a team like the Sounders, they always try to find a way to take it seriously. And they do take it seriously, these Open Cup games. They take it so seriously. It's been an unbelievable thing to see how they are able to just bear down, go forward, and perform like a club that wants trophies. It doesn't matter, you know, league-wide, international-wide, or domestic Open Cup-wide, FA Cup-wide, if you want to say it as well. But still, though, it's a situation where the Sounders are going to look really, really strong. I do have 2 other interviews, actually. They are recorded. One is with the gentleman named Steven Lenhardt, who's not the player, but, of course, he helps out with the 5 minutes to kick off podcast of the Portland Timbers, and we'll play that for you in a couple of minutes. And then later on in the show, my good friend Earl Reed, who also was able to help with a taped interview to get other things going. That'll be later on in the show as well. But other than that, here on the 40 Cents Fire American Soccer Show, talking about the U.S. Open Cup once again in Round 5 review, the Seattle Sounders are always going to be that type of team that's going to be dangerous, and it's, you know, they want the glory. And you know what? You just cannot blame them, because they really, really want to go out there, and they want to perform at their best for every single cup that's available. And, you know, once again, it got all the way into the round of penalties, and you just have to say, for Seattle, that was interesting to watch. That was very, very interesting to watch, where Seattle went first. Gonzalo Pineda made it 1-0, and then Kari Stevenson for San Jose made it 1-1. And then all of a sudden, the questions of, you know, will Marcus Hahnemann become big, or will a keeper become big and make these stops that are important for one side? And that's what happened with Hahnemann, because Papa made it 2-1 Seattle, and then Hahnemann kept it at 2-1 as Alan Gordon's shot, even though he didn't make the miss, or excuse me, he didn't make the save, he made the miss, Gordon, by hitting the post and out. So in a certain way, you had Gordon thinking bad things. So then it became 2-1 for Seattle. Brad Evans pops in there, and he makes it 3-1 on penalties. And here comes J.J. Caval. And a great save. I don't know if the penalty wasn't taken well enough by Caval, but I'll say this. I thought it was a good penalty and a great save by Hahnemann, and that kept it 3-1. And all Lamar Nagel really needed to do was convert to just to end the penalty round shootout, and that's what happened. Lamar Nagel made it 4-1 in the final in the penalty round shootout because of the situation here. And Seattle moves on into the quarterfinals once again, and they are just trying to get back to where they want to be. And, of course, 2 years ago, they lost in that final against Sporting Kansas City. Last year's Open Cup, they lose in the earlier rounds to the Tampa Bay Rowdies on the road. Of course, an old NESL matchup with the Sounders and the Rowdies. You know, legacy game, of course. If you think about it, it was really, really exciting and interesting to see. You want to know what else is interesting and exciting to see? How about the Battle of Dallas? My God. The Battle of Dallas. Houston versus FC Dallas at BBVA Compass Stadium. Fabian Castillo made it 1-0 in the 35th minute. Giles Barnes leveled it at 1-1. Dallas had a penalty that was unfortunately skied over the crossbar, so it ended the half at 1-1. And then Andreas Escobar made it 2-1 for FC Dallas in the 58th minute. And then all of a sudden, Omar Cummings comes off the bench, and he converts the equalizer to make it 2-2. We go into extra time. And in the first half of extra time, it would be Tesho Akindele that would get the big goal for FC Dallas to make it 3-2. And unfortunately, Houston could not get the third equalizer to at least force penalties, which it did not happen. And for the Dynamo, they get eliminated. This is weird. Not to say that Tally Hall would not have been the keeper in this game. I think he probably would have been the keeper in this game regardless. But to see Tyler Derrick being sent off in the fourth round by playing the ball outside of his area, that was probably one of the strangest things you will ever see at all. And it's just a situation where you have to say that you never thought you'd see Hall actually playing in another Open Cup game, maybe until the quarterfinals or the semifinals. But once again, you're seeing Open Cup games going down the wire. Maybe one or two that finished off in regulation, but these games definitely going down the wire. Just an unbelievable situation we have here when you have these Open Cup games. And like we said before, four games that went into extra time and victory was achieved there. One of the five round of 16 games ended in penalties. So that was an amazing thing to see. And then about two more, I would say, and actually three more finishing in regulation. Of course, we already talked about the red card situation with Atlanta. And you just have to say that this has been a pretty good Open Cup season. Once again, it's gotten better, more action, more excitement. It was definitely fun to watch. It's been great to see. And you know what? You just have to say that for these guys or these teams that are performing in the Open Cup, they're putting it out there, man. They're putting it out there. It's just wonderful and fun things to talk about and to see what is going on when you talk about the Open Cup, because this is definitely, I keep saying this all the time. I keep saying this all the time. And you just have to say that this is what happens when you've got pride on the line and you're trying to go forward and you're trying to try to make it good, not just for yourself, but for your team as well. And it's just one of those things where you just have to say that it's just been an absolute fantastic tournament that we're having. And it really doesn't matter who it is. It really doesn't matter what team it is or how they do it, or when they do it, and all that other stuff. It's all about what you're going to do on that moment, because you know for a fact, if you don't do your job, you're done. And that's it. There's no second chances. You're out of the tournament, plain and simple. It's over with. It's just an absolute, and you know what? It's just an absolute fun thing to see. And it's just an absolute wonderful thing to see. So, we'll see what happens as we move forward here on the 40 Cents Fire American Soccer Show, as we get ready to continue on with the show with some of the guests. And all you can say is this. With the World Cup taking a break today, thankfully we can take a bit of a break. We can take a bit of a breather, that we can look at the Open Cup and say how much of an importance it is to talk about, how much of an importance it is to discuss these things and to have some fun with it as well. But now my next guest, it's a taped interview once again. His name is Stephen Leonard. No, not the player. He lives out in Portland, Oregon, as the Portland Timbers defeated the Sporting Kansas City side by a final of 3-1. And he'll talk about that game and, of course, their quarterfinal matchup with their old rivals of the Seattle Sounders. It's Stephen Leonard from the 5 Minutes to Kickoff podcast here. Taped interview on the 40 Cents Fire Open Cup Review Show, Round 5.
Once again, the special U.S. Open Cup Round 5 review show, and coming all the way from Portland, Oregon. Of course, you can hear the podcast, the 5 Minutes to Kickoff podcast. It's my good friend Stephen Lenhart. No, I wish it was the player from San Jose, but it's my good friend Stephen Lenhart on over with the Portland Timbers and their victory against Sporting Kansas City in the U.S. Open Cup. Thanks again, Stephen, and how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, man. You know, just enjoying the World Cup, enjoying some U.S. Open Cup victories for the Timbers. You got to cherish those moments.
Absolutely, and that's a big victory for Portland. 3-1 victory on the road against Sporting Kansas City at Sporting Park. Amazingly, though, you're going to be facing them when the MLS league break is over, I believe, later tonight.
On Friday, we're Sporting Kansas City once again.
That's right. So, as you've mentioned it before we came on with this recording, Portland has done a better job on the road with victories than they have at home over at Providence Park with a lot of draws. But still, you have to say, I think that Caleb Porter has found his chemistry issues doing very well with these types of games, especially in the Open Cup.
Ooh, I think it's been a tough balance. We saw frustration with Caleb Porter with when they finally did lose at home. We saw it boil over into them asking them questions after the match. So it hasn't been smooth. I think, you know, the problem is the center back position, and then they had a kind of a hole up front. And, you know, they signed Liam Ridgewell.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows how Ridgewell will be? I looked at his Instagram feed, and it's Vegas, so I don't know how fit he's going to be right away, but you know, they dealt with those kind of issues, and they were teetering right on the brink of, were they going to be successful like everybody thought, or what was going on? And now, by doing those signings, they were able to free up some positions, and for an Open Cup match, they were able to bring in some players that have been in and out of the starting lineup, some guys that, you know, potentially are starters, like Gaston Fernandez and kind of. So Caleb Porter's definitely done a good job as far as getting players up to a certain level. It's about now taking that next step.
Yep, absolutely. Definitely agree with you. But I got to say, for Portland, they looked very good. They looked very confident out there. And to get a three, well, before Suni Saad got his penalty, 3-0 leading Sporting Kansas City, especially there. That's been, just like Providence Park has been a good home field advantage for the Timbers. That's a great home field advantage for Sporting Kansas City, just to see the Timbers getting a big victory and advancing into the quarterfinals of this edition of the Open Cup. That's a major victory.
The Timbers, I believe, have only kept one clean sheet all season as far as league play goes, and that away at Chivas with a strange lineup that they put out. It wasn't normal starters, and they got a clean sheet. So it's kind of interesting how the team's been able to play a bit better defense with a mixed match lineup compared to what their regular starting. I think you won't see too many clean sheets, but the matter of fact is that they forward and score goals because their defense isn't going to be something that they're going to be relying on too much.
Yeah, it looks like it, but still, though, I mean, that's still a pretty damn good victory, even though they are without Beisler and they are without Zuzi because of World Cup duty, but still. That's still a tough team to face, especially at home. I know seeing some of those calls, especially the penalty that Will Johnson converted before the penalty, you got Aurelien Collin all angry and all upset because, I guess he thought that he did a good job defending, and then here comes the penalty call, and it's, you really can't defend that. It's a penalty. You got to take your lumps, and it was a great conversion by Will Johnson.
Yeah, it was a great conversion by him. And, you know, I think they're seizing the opportunity a little bit, too, because I think, you know, that they've struggled a lot more in MLS play than I think these players ever thought they would. And so this Open Cup match, you know, and the Open Cup, you know, in general, until you really kind of get down to the semifinals and final, is an opportunity for guys to kind of, you know, re-jumpstart their season. Some guys are trying to fight for positions and try to show coach that they can be in there. But it's also, you know, with the lineup that Caleb Porter was able to put there, like I said, he's kind of mixed his lineups all year. So a lot of these guys had started. So I think it was an opportunity to get their confidence back. Hopefully it will pop into coming up on Friday and come into league play and try to get that 3 points at home.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, when you continue on, like we said before, Kansas City comes over to Portland to play when the league season resumes. Of course, the New York Red Bulls, I'll be over at Red Bull Arena when they face Toronto FC. But, of course, the big question now is, or really not the question, we know the answer. Once again, Cascadia Cup on the line again, this time in the Open Cup, as Portland will be tangling once again in the quarterfinals against the Seattle Sounders. Obviously, it never gets old seeing the Sounders and the Timbers battle for anything and everything. So how do you think it's going to be played out, which I'm assuming you'll be over at Starfire Sports Complex?
Yeah, that's the word, that it's fire. I know that place very well. I think some of these players do, too. It's a tough venue. It's a tough venue, especially in the Open. You know, the Sounders have made all the runs through the Open Cup. It's because they've had home games at Starfire. And it's going to, you know, the one thing that the Timbers have done pretty good this year has been their composure. You know, when there's been a lot of things that necessarily haven't this year, but they've done it with keeping their at Starfire. That's going to be a big challenge for them to stay away from red cards, stay away from just the atmosphere that is there. It's not the biggest venue in the world, but they pack them in there, and it's real loud, and it's just a different environment than their youth MLS play. So I really know how it might go. I mean, you would have to think that the Sounders have the advantage just because of where.
Mm-hmm, absolutely, and that should be an interesting thing when you tangle again with the Sounders. But how has the new players, obviously Gaston Fernandez, that got you both your goals against Kansas City, you feel he's calmed down? He's taken he feels a lot more comfortable now with how he's been playing so far with Portland. I know there's been a lot of changes before the season got underway, but it looks like he's really calmed down and he's gotten used to playing with the Timbers and in the city of Portland.
Yeah, it's been kind of strange. You know, he came in, he was in the starting lineup right away. He scored a goals actually right at the end that got us draws. They weren't game winners. They were ones where the Timbers from a goal down at home in the match, and he for those. You know, and then he's gotten some starts, and it's been kind of strange. Because, you know, I think the Timbers were expecting maybe somebody that was a little quicker, or maybe somebody that a little bit harder on the ball back, because those things that Caleb Porter really stresses, it was kind of an odd fit, not the quickest guy. Sometimes I think he gets a bit lazy out there, but, you know, you can't question it as far as his goal rate. He's been able to score some pretty so far. So it's been a strange one. You know, I don't know if you match on ESPN when the World Cup was right before the World Cup was started, and the Tim and him and, you know, Will Johnson's our cap penalties, and there was a penalty, and Will Johnson went to take, and Gaston Fernandez took the ball out of his arms, and they were kind of fighting for it, and you know, to see who was going to take the penalty kick. So it was kind of an odd night. Will Johnson ended up winning that one and getting the penalty kick. So he's kind of really figured him out yet.
All right. Well, listen, go ahead. Enjoy the rest of your evening. Thanks a lot for joining us, joining me today, and I'll talk to you soon.
Cheers.
Cheers.
That's Stephen Lenhart over at 5 Minutes to Kickoff podcast as he talks about the Portland Timbers' big victory over Sporting Kansas City and, of course, getting ready for the typical, the old Cascadia rivalry. If it's not just in the MLS regular season, it's in the Open Cup. So it's going to be exciting. It's going to be a lot of fun. I know I cannot wait to see what's going to happen in the quarterfinals. And we will talk about those quarterfinal matchups towards the end of the show as we get ready for some interesting stuff. Just some news to pass along here for everyone that is interested. Of course, still going on with the the World Cup, as it looks like I will be a part of this coming Sunday, 12:30 Eastern Time in the afternoon. I've been invited by the BBC Sports World Service over in England to discuss U.S. soccer. So everything's all settled and all the information comes my way, I will definitely pass it along. I'll be a part of the BBC World Service Sports World group, as they'll be asking me questions about U.S. soccer. Once again, that's at 12:30 p.m. Eastern this coming Sunday, 9:30 a.m. So hopefully everyone can listen. I'll pass along the information on my Twitter and on Facebook. It's going to be I'm very excited about this. I'll be honest with you. I'm very, very excited about this. This is going to be an interesting thing for me. And, you know, I'm flabbergasted. I'm flabbergasted. I'm happy. I'm excited that this is going to happen. And boy, oh boy, oh boy, this is going to be a lot of fun, very interesting, very, very happy to hear this, very, very happy to be a part of this. And, you know, and everyone in England, of course, I know I got friends in the UK that'll be listening. So definitely it will be a lot of fun to talk about U.S. soccer again. And it's going to be exciting and fun to talk about it over in England. So I can't wait for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. I know for a fact I'll be enjoying this. Wow. Asking me to talk about U.S. soccer's run, that's going to be amazing. I'm just so happy that I've been picked. It's been so happy. I'm just so happy that they've asked me to do this, and I'm excited. I'm very, very excited, and hopefully everything will be going very well for me when we talk about what U.S. soccer has done so far. And, you know, a lot of fun, just a lot of fun. You know, this is what happens. This is the start of everything, you know? And yeah, I'm excited. I'm very excited to do this. I'm very, very excited to discuss this. I'm very, very excited to talk about U.S. soccer as a whole and the positive stuff that's been going on here. And once again, I'm excited. I am very, very excited. I'm very happy to do this, and it's an unbelievable feeling, to be honest with you. Very, 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 very excited. Have this opportunity this opportunity to go on English radio and to have some fun here and to enjoy it and everything. So I cannot wait. And I'm just excited. I'm just very, very excited. I cannot wait for this. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. I cannot wait. But let's move forward here. And once again, we've talked about these round five matchups. Obviously, we've talked about Chicago and Columbus. Actually, we haven't really talked about Chicago and Columbus, but let me just say this. My God, what a game this has been. What a game this has been between the Crew and the Fire. Once again, you thought that the Fire were going to take advantage of the situation, but they didn't. And then it comes up late, players that come up for those moments where they're going to try to find a way to find a way to make a big goal happen. And obviously that was Juan Luis Anangono, who has been an unbelievable find so far in this tournament. Obviously, it all got started by Patrick Guyani that converted in the 34th minute. But then again into second half, Jar Arrieta for Columbus equalizes to make it 1-1. That was a heck of a goal, too. But then Bernardo Anor for Columbus, who's been red hot in this Open Cup, he scores to make it 2-1 Columbus. But then as we talked about, Juan Luis Anangono, he makes it 2-2. And then that was late in the 83rd minute. But then you get into extra time, and Chicago, they don't waste any time. Quincy Ameriquois gets the match winner in the 92nd minute in extra time. But then you see Michael Parkhurst with a terrible challenge. I mean, especially a man like Parkhurst that you never thought he would do something like this. And he did. And unfortunately, these are the situations where, you know, these are the situations that you don't like to see. And it's one of those that you're disgusted by it. You're very disgusted by that type of a performance from Michael Parkhurst, who is just absolutely a wonderful player. And he goes off and he does something like that. You just wonder what's in his head. Obviously, you know, yeah, you're upset that you gave up the lead. You're upset that you gave up the lead. And you just hope, and you just really, really hope that something like this doesn't ever happen again. Obviously, you know, it's frustration, and I understand frustration, but still, you know, the frustration should never have happened in the first place. So that is what's going on. That's the situation at hand. And all I can say is that it's going to be interesting to see. And hope everyone, you know, over there understands. And you can't let this happen. Cannot allow your frustrations to go overboard like that. You just can't. Because if you do, then, you know, it's all ruined here. But once again, it's just a situation where you have to go forward with, and you got to try and go out there, and you got to try and play hard, you got to try to work hard for all these things that's going for you. I just think that, unfortunately, it's just a sad thing to see. But hopefully these things will be a lot better. And hopefully everything will get everything will become a lot better and a lot easier for what's going on here. So, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see what's going on. And we just have to look forward and seeing what's going to happen with the Chicago Fire, as once again, they will be in Atlanta to take on the Silverbacks. So that should be an exciting situation. But for, you know, once again, Juan Luis Anangono, you know, a lot of Chicago Fire fans are waiting for him to break out into becoming a good goal scorer. And as we saw, he finally did break out. But, you know, it's just one of those things where it's really tough to see and it's really tough to discuss when you got a player who's supposed to be doing the job and he hasn't, and now he has. And now it looks like Chicago is probably starting to collect themselves and trying to at least play the game they know how to play. Because to me, it looks like that the Chicago Fire are starting to turn things around. And, you know, when you look at MLS play, and we'll do that another time, obviously, but when you look at MLS play, it looks like for sure that the Fire are trying to get back to the top end of the Eastern Conference. We'll see what happens, obviously, when we get to when we get back into league play, and of course that's going to start tonight. That's why the show is being done tonight. The New York Red Bulls, of course, will be hosting the Toronto FC side this Friday. Portland's home against Sporting Kansas City, so that's going to be an interesting situation. And we're going to see what's going to happen as we move forward here and talk more about this MLS season that's about to restart. So it's going to be a lot of interesting things. Of course, the quarterfinals will be coming in very soon. And let's talk about that other round five matchup, New England Revolution, heading up to upstate Western New York to take on the Rochester Rhinos. It was basically Sair Sen with the first goal of the match in the 11th minute, and then Kellen Rowe, who has been an amazing player in Open Cup games, including last year. He scored his goal to make it 2-0 for New England, but Colin Rolfe came back to pull one even, or to pull one back, I should say, for Rochester in the 55th minute. And that, after that, that was it. Once again, red cards an issue in the fifth round of the Open Cup as Babacar Diallo gets sent off in the 90th minute on a reckless challenge and a very dangerous tackle. And it's just a situation where, you know, these types of, you know, extreme challenges have to be taken out. It just has to be taken out. So it's a situation where, once again, cannot happen. These things should never happen. And unfortunately, it's a situation where it's just really tough. It's just really, really tough to see. And hopefully we'll see something being done about this. And all I can say is that it's a situation where you have to hope that for Rochester, it would be nice if they would get back into the situation they were back in 1999, because they beat the Colorado Rapids to win the U.S. Open Cup and being the first lower division side to defeat an MLS team in Open Cup competition before Major League Soccer came underway. Because at the time when the Richmond Kickers won their Open Cup, it was the year before MLS came around. So technically, Richmond back then would have been considered top level. But as we already know, and as we've already heard, Richmond now third division, and MLS is the top division of the land. So we'll see what happens moving forward with more Open Cup stuff coming our way. Now, obviously, we have some great stuff here going on, and as we take a look at some of the situations that are coming our way here, you just have to say that once again, and just to remind everyone that I will be on BBC Radio this coming Sunday at 12:30 p.m. Eastern, 9:30 a.m. Pacific, to discuss discuss U.S. soccer. Very, very happy to do this. Very excited for it. I cannot wait to discuss the U.S. men's national team in the World Cup and just a lot of fun things going on with that. And, you know, very excited to discuss the U.S. men's national team in this World Cup. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be fantastic. I hope you guys will listen to it. I will send out links when I officially find out, you know, where you can listen to it. Obviously, they're on Twitter as well, so you could probably follow the people on Twitter, which is BBC Sports World, at BBC Sports World. So hopefully it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a lot of fun. I know I cannot wait. It's going to be great. And boy, oh boy, oh boy. Very excited about this. Very, very excited about this. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. I cannot wait for this to happen. And, you know, just a lot of fun. Just a lot of fun. I can't wait to talk about it. I can't wait to discuss it. You know, I mean, this is great. This is going to be fantastic. And I'm still excited about this. I can't believe this has happened to me. I know this is, we're talking about the Open Cup, but, you know, had to talk about this, and it's going to be great. And I'm just really excited. I'm really excited. I have to be composed now, obviously. I have to try to be composed as much as I can here because it's only, you know, I can't really go crazy. And it's just fun stuff. It's just fun stuff. I cannot wait. I cannot wait. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm just so excited about it. It's just great. But once again, in the U.S. Open Cup, it's going to be exciting, a lot of fun, and it's just going to be a blast. It's just going to be a blast. I'm telling you right now, I cannot wait for this. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm just excited by it, and I'm just really excited. I know I'm never speechless, am I? No, this is the first time. Really, really excited. I'm really, really, really excited. I cannot wait. And it's exciting. It's very exciting. It's a lot of fun. And I cannot wait to talk about it. I cannot wait to talk about it. And it's just going to be tons of fun, very excited. I cannot wait. It's going to be fantastic. This is the situation where, you know, all this hard work pays off. Speaking about hard work, final interview today with my good friend Earl Reed, and talking about the Philadelphia Union's victory in extra time over the New York Cosmos. And here he is right now, Earl Reed.
And welcome back to the U.S. Open Cup Review Show, Round 5, as we talk to my good friend down in Philadelphia area. It's Earl Reed from the PhillySoccerPage.net. Thanks a lot, Earl, for being on again.
Well, thanks for asking me to come on, and thanks for the plug. I'm
nope.
also
just to throw it out there, I have a couple of videos, video series that I'm doing on World Soccer Talk, and maybe an article or two, so just keep an eye out for that. Some tactics type stuff. I hope I don't bore anybody with that, but some people really are into tactics. So.
No, absolutely. I mean, we have to talk about tactics and how the games were won and how the games were lost. I mean, if we don't have tactics managers like you, then we'd all be lost. So.
Well, we've gotten away from hactics in
oh.
Philadelphia now that John Hackworth has been let go, but you know, we're still trying to check out what you know, Jim Curtin has instituted with the union. Although it seems to have worked so far in the U.S. Open Cup competition.
So far, so good. Of course, it took extra time with the New York Cosmos, but Philadelphia comes up smelling roses with a 2-1 victory. But besides the tactics by the coaches, tactics by the players apparently after Latu scored that penalty. We got a couple of red cards here that seems to be someone wasn't happy about something, Earl.
Definitely not. yeah, it was about the 118th minute, so about 2 minutes before the end of the match. Antoine Hopinot was trying to, the forward for the Union, was trying to waste some time, take it down in the corner, run out the match a bit, and got into a little tangle with Iosi. They both ended up on the ground. Hopinot got up, and Iosi kind of lashed out with it kicked out at him, and a fracas ensued. Michael Lahoud, who had just come on the minute before for the Union, kind of jumped in on that and got a little physical with Iosi, and basically it's just a big get-together by both teams. In the end, Ismail Alfeth, the referee, ejected Iosi, and Lahoud, who is kind of the second, or really the third guy in, I guess is what you might call him,
mm-hmm.
To try to use a hockey term. And also in that sequence, Ockford was also ejected. I didn't exactly see what he did, but maybe he just got a little animated. Really, the Cosmos were pretty animated the entire night. They thought the referee was doing them wrong consistently. Savarese, the head coach, was also livid most of the time, which, you know, I'm not 100% sure he wasn't, you know, he was wrong. I mean, I think there were times when certainly Alfath seemed to favor the Union quite a bit. But, you know, in the end, that ended up making the finish at a 10-9 situation, which is never the way you want to see a match go. And it was really sort of a shame given, you know, the grandeur of this tournament, you know, to see kind of see it end in such a, you know, sort of a shameful manner with players getting ejected and a lot of fisticuffs and ugliness.
Absolutely, we don't really want to see that. But still, though, I have to say I was watching the stream, and, you know, both sides really took it to each other. Nothing in the first half, but all the explosion came in the second half. A goal in the 56th minute by Alessandro Nocelli gave the Cosmos the early lead, but that good old fan favorite, Sebastian Latu over in Philadelphia, made it 1-1 in the next minute. That was a great goal, by the way.
Yeah, it really took a long time for the game to develop any sort of rhythm. The Cosmos seemed to be a little sharper in this match. Maybe that's because they have had some layoff time. Well, they've been competing in this tournament too, but you know, they've completed their summer or their spring season and whatnot. But they seem to be the better team early on. Union, I think, are still trying to sort out what they're doing under their new head coach, and Savarese seem to have the Cosmos ready to go. But like you said, in 56 minutes, Nocelli just slotted a ball underneath Andre Blake, got down the right. Open on a through ball, and he played it underneath him. And immediately after that, the Union scored on a ball to the end line, and Andrew Wenger, who played the ball off the end line across, and it seemed like it might have been a mistake by Moore, the goalkeeper for the Cosmos. There were a number of plays similar to that earlier in the match that Moore seemed to handle fine, but the ball snuck beneath him, and Latu was there to basically convert the chance rather easily. Nobody was there marking him, and that made the game 1-1 until quite deep into extra time.
Yeah, absolutely. The penalty was called. It looked like a Union player was tackled in the box, brought down, and so Latsue gets the opportunity for the penalty and converts.
Yeah, I think this was probably the jumping-off point for the Cosmos, even though they had already been pretty animated up until that point. I think I'm not sure which of their coaches had already been ejected, but I think this might have been the case where Aleko Eskandarian was also ejected at this point. Or maybe he was, I don't know, he might have been ejected at the point when the red cards were issued. But, you know, the Cosmos were livid on the bench. They were kind of going after the fourth official, and I think they felt really hard done because in the first period of extra time, Maurice Adu clipped, I believe it was Stekelin.
Mm-hmm.
Is that his name?
Yep.
Stokelin. Stokelin was heading into the box, and it was, I think, I've had varying reports. I'm going with the eyes that have seen it multiple times and say it was inside the box. Maurice Adu toppled him over. Even the Philly Soccer page writer who was there in the press box thought that it was a penalty, and LFF did not issue it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think from that, the Cosmos felt like this was a, you know, the case where the player was hauled down in the box was, you know, kind of weak compared to the other one, and so I think that was where really the minds were lost and a lot of, but anyway, after the penalty was given, Sebastian Latsue continues his fine record as a penalty scorer. He was able to convert that to Moore's right. Moore did guess right on the play, but or on the shot, but Latsue would hit it with enough pace and in the right spot to just get it by him. And I mean, that ran out the scoring and sends the Union into the next round.
And you have to say, and I will agree, you hate seeing the officials ruining a wonderful game like this was supposed to be between the Union and the Cosmos, but you know, you got to try to be above that, but obviously once you gave the penalty late in second half stoppage time, that was too late for them. Talk about Latsue. Has he seemed to look a lot better since his return to the Union?
Well, I think Jim Curtin has been trying to use him a little more as a forward than what John Hackworth did. There had been times that Hackworth had played him up front, but it was much rarer the last year and a half, that Hackworth had him. He wanted to play him more as a right wing player. If you remember last year, he got a number of assists playing in that role. I think Latsue is, you know, still a quality player. He did miss a chance early on in this match that it seems odd because usually Latsue is a pretty, you know, cool customer in front of net, but he had an open shot that he missed. But in the 57th minute, he didn't miss. But
right.
He's, you know, the Union are going to have to find someone that can get into scoring form. Connor Casey was doing that before the World Cup break hit, and that was also before Hackworth was fired. But he has been injured recently, and that's why he's been held out of these Open Cup matches. I think they want to make sure that he is fit going into the second half of the regular season for the Union. So, you know, if Latsue is another guy who can start getting on his scoring form and find his touch, that could really help because, you know, if you remember last week against Harrisburg, Andrew Wenger got a couple of goals in extra time. So, you know, the more that the Union can have these players who are, you know, up front being able to put balls behind the goalkeeper, you know, that's really, I think, been where the team has struggled in the early part of the season. One other aspect of this match I think you'd be remiss not to point out is the whole MLS versus NASL mantra that I think you can draw from this match where the Cosmos are, you know, quite clearly the sort of hallmark team in NASL right now. Obviously with their history and whatnot, I think they get plenty of headlines. And I really think that, you know, NASL wanted to see the Cosmos to get through, and for, you know, the Philadelphia Union to put them out after Cosmos got by the Red Bulls. You know, I think that's a big thing for MLS, even though there were a couple other NASL teams that were successful last night. I think getting the Cosmos out of the competition probably was a feather in MLS's cap.
Yeah, I would have to agree there. You know, there's been a lot of talk about the Cosmos making the return and everything else that's going on, and of course, it'll be nonstop until
the. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
The storyline of having the Cosmos in the competition probably would have been, you know, quite an interesting, you know, subplot if they were to have gotten through this match and then, you know, progressed even further into quarterfinals, I believe.
Yes, it
is.
Yes, it is.
So, I mean, seeing a team with that kind of history and cachet start making waves, especially against MLS teams, would be, you know, good for the competition probably. Maybe not so much for Major League Soccer, who I think wants to definitely prove that they are first division team in this country, or first division league in this country. And so, you know, for what it's worth, it's tough to see the Cosmos go because of their, you know, their following and, you know, what they bring to the table. But, you know, from a personal standpoint, it's good to see the Union move on. And I guess we still don't know who they're going to be playing. I guess that match is going on as we record this. But
it is right now, and you'll be facing the winner of either the Rochester Rhinos or the New England Revolution. So it should be very interesting to see who Philadelphia is going to be hosting. Jim Kurt.
Also, just I have to admit, I'm a graduate of the University of Rochester, so I remember the Raging Rhinos. obviously, the Rhinos are one of the, I believe they're the only, maybe they are. I'm probably speaking out of turn saying that they're the only, but the most recent lower division team to win the U.S. Open Cup. So.
Very true, sir. 1999 against the Colorado Rapids at Columbus Crew Stadium.
There you go. So anyway, you're going to mention Curtin.
Well, I was going to mention Jim Curtin. Well, exactly. Like, or else it's curtains, but no, but then again. I had to do it. I had to. I know it's probably been maybe, like, what, one or two games, maybe several games. What are the differences from Jim Curtin than from John Hackworth, and do you think he might get the job long term?
Okay, let's go with basically the only real difference I've seen from Curtin is his desire to put Maurice Adu in the back line. He's been playing Adu back there, and, you know, from what I've heard I don't think Adu wants to be playing back there. He wants to be playing in the midfield, especially coming over to MLS. You know, the theory would be that he is, he has that kind of ability that he ought to match up well in MLS to be one of the stronger central midfielders. Instead, Curtin in these two U.S. Open Cup games put him in the back line. I'm not sure how happy Adu is about that. Obviously, summer is approaching and the transfer window will be opening up one of these days. You know, I don't know how long. I mean, I assume it's a season-long loan. I don't know if there's any way for Adu to wiggle out of a loan. From the way I've seen things go, it would be fair to say I'd be surprised if he's back after this season, given the way that the team's performed, and if Curtin continues to put him in the back line, it makes me, you know, unless the Union have a complete turnaround and somehow, you know, I don't know. I think Adu would probably like to get back to Europe and try to get on a team that's going to, you know, use him as a central midfielder. But, you know, I could be wrong with that. But that's really the only major difference. He may be a little bit more direct and a little less, you know, quick passing through the midfield, trying to play things on the ground. Instead, he may be a little more trying to get the ball into Andrew Wenger and use him as a target man. But, I mean, his selections have been similar. He's brought Michael Lahoud back in the mix a little bit more. He started him last match, and this one he came off the bench only to get that red card. For the most part, you know, still relying on Brian Carroll, who has been the captain for the last couple of seasons, much to the behest of some of the fans who thought that, you know, with Adu coming into the squad, that would mean Brian Carroll would get phased out. Instead, Carroll has started both of these Open Cup matches, so it looks like Carroll's still in the mix. Pompano is still a guy off the bench. Leo Fernandez is still a guy off the bench. Danny Cruz continues to start on the right wing. These are all players that kind of have the Hackworth
mentality.
Hard workers, probably practice well, not necessarily guys that are, you know, the most technically proficient, but guys who are going to give you 110% for as long as they can go. There's sort of a frustration maybe from fans, but, so far he's getting a couple wins, granted against lower division teams in the Open Cup competition. I've been vocal on Twitter about, I'm not sure that Curtin is the answer if he's going to be making similar decisions to Hackworth. I'm not sure why you would get rid of Hackworth and have a guy who has little to no experience basically making the same decisions as Hackworth. But that being said, this is Nick Sakevich's team, so I guess he can call the shots as he wants, and he may still give Curtin an opportunity to see the Union out of this hole that they've dug themselves in the first part of the season.
Earl, thank you very much, and I will talk to you next time. Thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity.
And that's my good friend Earl Reed, who always has an opportunity on this show, basically, and talking about the U.S. Open Cup and everything else going on. Now, let's get back to business here. We got the quarterfinals coming up, July 8th and July 9th. One match on July 8th and three on Wednesday, July the 9th. So here is the quarterfinal schedule as it is official, obviously. Confirmation has already been done. New England Revolution will be at the Philadelphia Union at PPL Park in Chester, Pennsylvania, July the 8th, and that match is at 7 o'clock Eastern Time. The Chicago Fire will be facing off against the Atlanta Silverbacks down in Georgia. That will be at Silverbacks Park outside of Atlanta. That's at 7:30 p.m. Eastern start time. As the Silverbacks host Chicago Fire, course, Silverbacks, one of two NESL lower division sides that are still alive in this tournament. Carolina Railhawks will be hosting FC Dallas back at the main stadium at Wake Med Soccer Park in Cary, North Carolina. That's also 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time start, or Eastern Daylight Savings Time start. And the only match on the West Coast, the Cascadia matchup between the Portland Timbers and the Seattle Sounders, which will be back at Starfire Soccer Complex in Tukwila, Washington. That's a 10:30 p.m. Eastern start time, 7:30 p.m. Pacific start time. So once again, this is going to be a very, very interesting situation for all of us when you get to watch the U.S. Open Cup. Because, once again, this is our national championship. We must, as always, take it seriously. And, once again, we have the Carolina Railhawks and the Atlanta Silverbacks. These are the two sides that have reached the furthest from the lower levels. Obviously, Rochester losing in round five, so they will have their prize money first, with being the top USL Pro League side making it that far. Atlanta and Carolina are basically in a dead heat. We'll see what happens when we get closer to the semifinals. Let me tell you something right now. This is going to be exciting. This is going to be awesome. This is going to be interesting. And it's a situation where you're hoping to see some great action once again. Once again, the draw has not been brought out yet for the semifinals. I could probably guess. I can probably guess that we could see maybe FC Dallas or Carolina go to the West Coast or play either Portland or Seattle, depending on who wins that coin flip. I can definitely see Chicago, Atlanta winner taking on New England, Philadelphia winner. But once again, I don't have the draw, so I really don't know how it's going to be done and how it's going to be all set up. But I can definitely tell you this. I can definitely tell you that it's going to be exciting. It's going to be a lot of fun. I cannot wait for this. It's just going to be great. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. And that is why the U.S. Open Cup is always exciting. It's always exciting when you have a tournament like this. There's so many twists and turns. You think you're going to have one or two games that's going to be a dominant performance by one side, but then again, you're seeing all this craziness happening, and that's what the fifth round provided. And, of course, we're going to take a look, and hopefully we'll see what happens. And it's just been really, really exciting. It's going to be just an absolutely interesting situation when it comes to this type. So it's going to be exciting. It's going to be a lot of fun. You know, I can't wait for this. I can't wait for the quarterfinals to get over here. Obviously, we've got a lot of stuff going on, of course, with the World Cup being played with the U.S. national team. And, of course, that's going to be the one problem there with the quarterfinals. If the USA is going to be playing a game where, hopefully, you know, it's going to be at a good time. There won't be any interference. But still, it should be exciting. It should be a lot of fun. I cannot wait. Now, here is, before we finish up with the show today, some World Cup news just to let you know. The review shows starting tomorrow with the round of 16, Brazil versus Chile. You're going to have all of these World Cup review shows now starting on time at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 p.m. Pacific, because we have to understand now, we could have extra time, we could have penalties, and trying to make enough room here so that we don't interfere with the games that are being played. There will not be two shows, one after each final, or excuse me, one after each knockout game. We're not going to do that. From the first game of the knockout round all the way till the final semifinal knockout round, because obviously for the final, that will be at 3 o'clock Eastern, noontime Pacific. But all knockout round games will be played, and then we'll have the shows right away after the second of the knockout round games of that day. So obviously here, if we can get to the schedule for the FIFA World Cup real quickly here, and as we once again discuss it, so tomorrow on Saturday, June the 28th, I should say, not today because I just got confused now. Sorry about that. But Saturday, June the 28th, Brazil takes on Chile, and that's going to be a 12 noon start time. And then Colombia will take on Uruguay at 4 o'clock Eastern, and we will be live at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 p.m. Pacific, after Colombia takes on Uruguay. Now, once again, they start at 6:30 because we're trying to make sure we have enough room here to keep you guys in tune to what's going on with the games. There will be no show after Brazil-Chile. The show will be after the entire day is done. So at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 p.m. Pacific, join me here with my co-host, Carter Kirschner, as well as other guests to discuss what's been going on with the World Cup, and it should be a lot of fun. It should be interesting, exciting. I cannot wait. It's going to be fantastic, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And that will be for Saturday and for Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. And then, of course, the two quarterfinal days, once again, Friday and Saturday, and then the semifinals on the 8th and 9th of July, we will be doing review shows after all those games are done, and then when we get to the final, obviously that'll be a little bit different. But the truth, the thing is, that's what's going to happen. Of course, we'll still have on with us Jonathan Johnson to discuss France. We'll have on John Jagu, who covers Mexico. We'll have Marios C. Svantos for Greece. We'll try to bring on some other people to discuss Brazil and Chile, Colombia and Uruguay. And then, of course, the big USA versus Belgium game, which will definitely be a post game, and we'll see what happens here. Many predicting the U.S. probably will have a win here. Belgium has been not scoring goals before the 70th minute or the substitutes coming off the bench scoring these goals. So we'll see what the U.S. can do. Should be a lot of fun. And it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen. It's going to be a lot of fun, very interesting stuff. And I cannot wait to get involved in this. I cannot wait to have you guys talk about it, the World Cup. And here we are, U.S. Open Cup. I'm very excited. I'm very, very excited. It's going to be a lot of fun. I cannot wait. It's going to be a blast. It's going to be a real blast. I cannot wait for this. I am very, very excited about this. It's going to be cool. It's going to be fantastic. It's going to be awesome. I cannot wait. It's really, really exciting. It's a lot of fun. And I just cannot wait for this World Cup to continue. I cannot wait for this Open Cup stuff to keep on going, my friends. Of course, we'll have the quarterfinals review show ready on that Friday. Now I have to take a look to see if I can. I got to probably have to set up a different day here. So they say the quarterfinals will be July 7th, July 8th, 8th and 9th. Okay, yes. So Friday the 11th will definitely be the quarterfinal review show that we'll have here on the block on the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. Just have to make sure that I don't interfere with certain things, certain games, certain situations. That's the only thing we have to worry about. Other than that, everything's fine. Everything's okay. Getting ready for the quarterfinals on Friday, July 11th for that review show. I'll obviously set it up and get ready to go. Should be a lot of fun. Should be exciting. I know I cannot wait. It's going to be awesome, 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 wonderful stuff going on here on the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. I know you guys are enjoying it. I know I'm enjoying it. And I want to say thank you very much for listening to this. This very rare afternoon start time, I know it's a little uncharacteristic, but because of the World Cup and because the Red Bulls will be playing tonight, I was able to do this around this time. I want to thank my guests, Ryan Martin in Atlanta. I want to thank Neil Morris over in Cary, North Carolina. I want to thank Earl Reed over in the Delaware, Philadelphia area. And I also want to thank Stephen Lennart over in Portland, the 5 Minutes to Kick Off podcast. Thank you guys very much for joining me today, for listening today. And if you're not able to listen to it live, of course, the archive will be available just as soon as we are officially off the air. But once again, you can listen to me tomorrow through Tuesday for World Cup Round of 16 review shows. And don't forget, this Sunday, 12:30 p.m. Eastern, 9:30 a.m. Pacific, I'll be on the BBC World Sports Show talking about U.S. soccer and the World Cup. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening. As always, enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good afternoon, everyone, and talk to you next time. Bye-bye for now.